Welcome, everybody, to the Hello Show, episode number 5, starring me, Dave Lawrence, and Sir David Kendall.
Hello.
Thanks, everybody, for joining us once again. We've had a bit of a break between episode number 4 and episode number 5. We've been trying to coordinate our special guest, and he's having some problems coordinating a schedule with us, which is fine. David, we'll just soldier on.
Oh, well.
Yep, so this episode, we're going to talk about some fun stuff, like backup, like floppy disks, if you can remember those. David, what did you have to talk about?
I want to talk about email.
That is a great subject. Well, why don't you get us kicked off here at episode 5? What about email?
Well, this is something of a rant. You and many others who have emailed me in the past on the several issues of email etiquette. First of all,
This is like family members forwarding you forwards with dirty pictures and things like that. That kind of etiquette?
Not quite, no. it's more to do with how you fill in the little fields like CC and BCC when you are forwarding stupid jokes to your family members and office workers. And also top quoting versus bottom quoting.
And now for everybody who doesn't know, CC means carbon copy. That's a holdover from the old paper memo thing, right?
Yes. Now, so many people I see seem to treat CC as just a general send this email to two people, when really it's a bit more focused than that. The idea of CC is, well, first of all, let me start off by saying that there's a reason you can actually put more than one person's name in the from field.
So you can send to multiple people.
Yeah. But if that's the case, then why do you have a CC field? Well, if you are deliberately sending and addressing an email to multiple people, then you put both of their names in the to field. If you are sending it to a certain group of people and addressing those people, but you might also want other people to know what's going on, then you put the people you're addressing in the to field and the people who might also want to know what's going on in the CC field. Understand?
That's kind of like if they're listening in on a conversation, but they don't need to hear it, or they're not talking to the group or whatever.
And then there's the BCC field, which stands for blind carbon copy. This is the one you use when you're emailing to people who... When you're forwarding emails to lots of people who might not know each other, and you know, certain people might not want to know other people's email addresses or keep them private, then you use that, because if you put somebody's email address in the BCC field, then it sends to them, but nobody can see, except the person who's received the email, nobody can see who else's name is in the BCC field.
Right. They're like the hidden listen-inner. Like if somebody had a cup up to the wall listening in.
Yeah. So if you're leaking memos from Steve Jobs out of Apple, then you use the BCC field. and then there's...
Well, so what bugs you? What's bothering you?
Well, what bugs me is when people put... people they're addressing in the CC field, or they put people they're not addressing in the to field. Now, the latter is far more common, but both of them kind of, you know, a little bit annoying, because, especially if you've got, like me, you've got a labelling system where things are classified based on whether you're to or CC'd.
Wow, that's hardcore.
Not too hard with Gmail.
Right. But I'm saying not everyone will respect your classification system.
But, no. I appreciate that, but...
So, do you have all this written down? I mean, is there a written source where you get all these rules, or is it something you just made up as you've gone along?
Well, it's generally accepted practice. In fact, I think it may even be in... I think it's RFC 852 that defines the standard for email, and it's in there that that's how these fields should be used.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Is this on the web somewhere?
Yeah, let me just find it, and then...
Yeah, we'll have to link it with the show or something.
C852.
I'll tell you what I use BCC for is to get people in trouble. Like if I'm going back and forth with someone and I want like a manager to listen into at work, that's when you use BCC.
Right.
Because then you feel like 007 or something. You're having secret conversations and someone is listening in. That's a lot of fun.
Right. I'm still trying to find this RFC with the specification in 1 minute.
What's really fun is when people use, and this is in a work environment, but they use the carbon copy to include someone that lends the email authority. So, like, if we send something to a coworker, but we include, like, our manager in the CC field, that automatically lends the email some authority, like, here's what I have to say, and so-and-so is listening in as well. You better take it seriously.
It's RFC 822, not 852. Standard for the format of ARPA, Internet Text Messages, August 13th, 1982.
82?
Yep.
Wow. You weren't even born then, were you?
Nope. My older brother and sister weren't.
Wow. I was about a year old. I'm an old man. But yeah, we should post this for people to share, right?
Yeah, I'll just send you the link.
Okay. Well, so anyway, so you must have had this happen a couple of times, or else it wouldn't bug you, right?
Yeah, well, our guest in particular seems to be munging the CC field using... wait a minute, is this... you've been putting you in the to field and me in the CC field, even though it's addressing us both.
I hope you're going to say this to his face if we do see him. Are you going to confront our guest with this internet protocol?
Well, it's going in the show, so we can hear that.
That's very passive aggressive, David.
Well, I'm sorry.
You know what? I'll bring it up for you. You don't have to worry.
Okay.
I'll bring it up for you.
Well, you don't need to worry. It's putting you in the right place. any.
Well, I don't want you to forget. See, I'm your backup in all this.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
I'll say,
yeah.
Oh,
I
David.
I forget to.
Let me remind you.
Yeah.
But is there other people that have done this? This horrible crime.
Yeah. I see it often.
Let's call them out right here on the internet. Let's call them out.
Their names?
Yeah, who dares disturb David P. Kendall in the email world?
Yeah. I won't say any names, but
schoolmates, coworkers, family?
Yes. Yeah. So, the sort of people who won't have read RFC 822.
I see. So the non-geeks who would have no idea.
Yeah. So,
my rule is to automatically delete anything with the letters FW colon in the subject line. See, whenever I see that, it's an automatic delete.
Except, So that forward I sent you when we got in the iTunes store, because you replied to that.
No, I think I deleted that too.
Well, you replied to it, so you must have...
Oh, okay. Well, maybe I made an exception for you then, David.
Of course.
Yes.
No.
But yeah, more often than not, people do not know these standard protocols for email usage. And I think it's up to us to educate people on this. I think we need to spread the word.
Yeah.
So I'm so glad you brought it up.
So the second issue I have is with people not emailing me in the right way is top quoting versus bottom quoting. This is to do with the placement of replies in responses to email.
So if you're replying above the previous email or below the previous email.
Exactly. So right. The default style for Microsoft Outlook and Mail.app and basically I think all consumer email clients, like Gmail does it even, which I think is disgusting since Google are on the whole such a good company.
I think you've tipped your hand.
So, the default style is to put the previous email in the chain beneath your reply to it. Now, this is a terrible idea. The old joke about it that ends up in people's signature tags is answer, because it messes up the order in which people normally read text. Question, why is top posting such a bad thing? Answer, top posting. Question, what is the most annoying thing in email? I mean, people don't do that. And also, if you want to reply to a certain part of an email, like if you're talking about one thing at the start of it and another thing at the end, then you just want to quote the start of it and then reply to that bit, and then quote the end of it, and then reply to that bit. So it's very clear what you're replying to.
Mm-hmm. But then I wonder if people want to read, you know, their own email first and then read yours, or if they want to read your response first.
Well, it's just the partisans of bottom quoting. The reason they cite for continuing this abhorrent practice is that if you top posting, then you have to scroll down in order to read the actual response. Well, that's rubbish. I mean, if anybody thinks that's an issue, go to thereisnopagefold.com on the internet.
So you're saying that the way people usually reply to emails is against our very human nature, in that we want to read sequentially or something?
Yes.
I think you're crazy. I think if this was an issue, millions of people would raise up and complain about it. Why haven't we seen a backlash, David? What's the deal?
Well, there is a huge backlash in the Usenet world. Especially if you go to
so like I'll ask the question again. Why haven't real people
so people who go on Usenet aren't real people, though.
I've never seen one, no. Not in real life.
All right.
Present company excluded.
Sorry?
I said present company excluded.
I think it's just general ignorance about the issue, really.
I said that could be. Kind of like the CCBCC thing.
Yeah. And as I was saying, if you go into the Usenet comp.lang area, comp.lang.c in particular, then if you bottom quote, then you are probably not going to get a response. Or else your response will be incredibly, not rude, but...
That sounds like prejudice.
They will be somewhat irritated. Well, it's... If you search in Google for how to ask smart questions, you'll come up with a guide written by a hacker called Eric S. Raymond, who's very well known for creating the open source movement. And I forget which particular application he wrote that was... Fetchmail, that's the one. So he wrote this application called Fetchmail, which does stuff with email. And that, together with his involvement in the open source movement, has made him one of the most renowned hackers on the internet. But his essay, How to Ask Smart Questions, is... If you ask a question in the wrong way on Usenet or in a web forum or whatever, where people who really care about this stuff are going to be there, then you'll probably get directed to that page.
This sounds like one of these things where the person who has a strong opinion is just going to be frustrated their entire life. Like, how can you go through life, you know, caring about this so much and then have just thousands of people emailing you doing it the wrong way, the way you think it should
be? Papyrus!
What's that?
Papyrus.
Yeah, right. But I see Papyrus maybe once a week. I get emails, you know, dozens a day.
Right.
So if you were to multiply my frustration at that stupid, ugly font by as many emails as I get, I would be dead. I would have an aneurysm and die. And, you know, hope springs eternal that that I don't see Papyrus as often as I see an email. But man, if I did, there would be no episode number 6, David. So what do you do when people email you the wrong way? Do you correct them? Because you haven't corrected me. This is the first I've heard of it.
No, I tend to ignore it, really. I mean, I'm not that annoyed about it. It's just a little niggle irritation that really... Okay. You know, when you have a lot of these little niggles and irritations every day, it adds up to a little bit of annoyance.
Right. Well, I was kind of worried about you, David. I was concerned for your health. And maybe I still am. I don't know. But now I know when I hit send on my Gmail account that a little heart pang is going to flicker and I'll, you know, I just don't want anybody to find you dead in the bathroom some morning.
I don't think that'll happen.
Okay. All right. Well, good. David, how do you do backup? How do you back up all those annoying emails and all your files and things? What's your system?
I wait for my hard drive to fail.
That's brilliant. That's like the email thing. Tons of people do it that way too. So you have no you've got no external hard drive to back up to. You don't do the cloud thing.
No, I don't. If I had somewhere an external or an internal drive of 80 gigabytes or more, then I would definitely use SuperDuper to back up, but I don't have one. So whatever one floats into my possession is these items of technology I'll work to do. I shall begin my backup procedures.
Like manna from heaven. So what happens if your hard drive does fail? You just lose all your stuff and you're okay with that?
I'll probably send it off to a drive savers repair man, data recovery people.
And now, how much does that cost?
Ballpark. I don't know, to be honest. Probably quite a lot. I would start backing up right away.
Right. I bet you it's more than a hard drive.
Hmm.
What do you think? You want to bet?
Let's just see. Drive data recovery.
Yeah. Well, you look it up, because I'm pretty careful about my backups. I really haven't had any bad experiences where I've lost a bunch of data and stuff, but I've seen it happen at work, and it just scares the heck out of me. So I'm always curious about people's backup, and I love to help people with their backup just to make sure that, you know, like my girlfriend, she has tons of great photos, and if she were to, her hard drive was to die, then she would lose all those great photos. And so, you know, I like to help her back those up. I think about my own photos and my music. I think about all the time I spent ripping CDs into iTunes, and I think that, good Lord, I'd never want to do that again, you know, because it took me like a month to do it all. So so it's just a lot of saved time and effort. Mm. But I use Carbon Copy Cloner, which is a little bit like SuperDuper. It's another Mac backup application, and I love it. It's great.
Mm. About £100 is what I'm getting for data recovery.
Really?
Yeah. So I just open currency convert. So pound sterling to dollars, £100.
Yeah, what's that like in our continually diminishing dollar?
You think yours is continually diminishing?
Well, anyway, I also have a Dropbox account where I keep, like, all my important documents, the stuff that, you know, I would lose my identity if I lost. I have a couple of hard drives
that
I plug in.
$150?
$150?
Mm.
So you could buy, about a 1 to 2 terabyte drive for that. Now, how many Macs could you, how many Donalds could you save to a terabyte drive?
Roughly about 20.
20, folks, 20. He could save 20 copies of his iMac hard drive on a terabyte drive.
No, that's a 2 terabyte drive. Wait a minute.
Okay. Well, you know, I'm not picking on you, David, but I just want you to think about these things because they're very important.
Well, somewhere upstairs, I do have an 80 gigabyte SATA drive.
Okay.
Which, it won't work in the enclosure I've got here because the enclosure I've got is an IDE enclosure.
Now, I've got one of those USB adapters where you can plug in a SATA drive, a SCSI drive, any kind of drive you can plug into this thing. And then it plugs into the USB on modern Macs, and then you can load it like a USB hard drive.
Right. Well, a funny story behind the purchase of this drive, this enclosure. It was actually, when I replaced the hard drive in Donald, a couple of weeks or months or something, a while ago. Before I changed it, I was going to back up everything onto my old iPod over USB 1, which is it took about 18 hours to do it.
It'd still be backing up, let's be honest.
Not quite, I don't think, but so. But then as I tried it twice, and then with about 3 hours before my friend who I invited round to help me switch the drive out arrived, I accidentally hit the eject button on my keyboard, not realizing that would unmount my iPod and stop SuperDuper from copying my drive. So I literally just ran out and bought the first FireWire enclosure that I could see. The only one I could find that had FireWire, and that's how I've got this one.
Mm.
So I just put the old drive in there and did that
save
instead
the day
of backing up to my iPod before running migration assistant.
Right. I hope you do find something to back up all that stuff. And if it's the iPod, then great. But, you know, sometimes I think people think I'm crazy because I have, you know, an off-site hard drive that I back up to. I have a USB drive hooked up to my airport base station. I have a time machine backup on a FireWire drive. I am locked and loaded. And sometimes I still don't think it's enough, but... But as long as you're backing up in some sort of fashion, you should be okay.
Well, most of the stuff that matters, like my schoolwork and all that stuff, is on my Dropbox.
Mm-hmm.
So it wouldn't really... It would be a very annoying loss if my hard drive were to fail. But it wouldn't cripple me. I wouldn't lose all my most important stuff.
Right.
And then all my photos are in Flickr as well. I can't think of anything else, but I'm sure there's other places where I'm storing things.
Right.
You know, on the
web. The photos is the big one, because those, I could lose documents and I would be okay, but if I lost my photos, that would be devastating.
Yeah. Part of the reason I paid for a Flickr Pro account is so that I could access the originals through there.
Right, and upload as many as you want, too, which is nice.
Yeah. Well, I don't really hit the 100 megabyte thing.
Yeah, but the little extra money each year is definitely worth it for something like that. So, and, you know, even when I buy stuff from iTunes, and I may have mentioned this before, but if I buy an album from iTunes or Amazon or whatever, I burn a physical copy of it immediately. And then, if anything did happen to my iTunes account, I would at least have a physical backup of that CD.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and I don't. Back in the days when there was DRM on the iTunes songs, seems so long ago. I don't think people realized you could do that. Burn your DRM songs to CD, and then Apple went bust or you changed operating system or whatever, you could still get your music.
Yep. And I found that, I would burn copies of CDs for friends with iTunes music on them, and there's a ceiling. You can only burn it, six or eight copies of it when the DRM was still around.
Mm.
And so, maybe I can say this now because they aren't DRM'd anymore, but that's what I would do. I would burn them to CD and then re-rip them up into iTunes and then burn until my heart's content.
Mm.
Hey, I paid for them. I can do whatever I want with them. That was my philosophy.
Yeah, so I'm guessing if you did that, then you didn't pay when they changed to non-DRM. You didn't pay to get your old tracks unlocked.
Heck no.
No.
Nope, sure didn't.
I only have one album that's got DRM on it, and to be honest, I'm not really bothered about it.
I mean, right. It's,
if I did lose it, I'd pay for it again. It's not that much.
Yeah. If it did become an issue, I would pay to get them all un-DRM'd, but for right now, I'm okay.
Mm.
So, speaking of backup, I bought a little floppy disk to USB drive, which if you're a Mac person and you're listening, you probably are. You'll know that Apple got rid of the floppy drives back around the G3 era with the iMac G3. Yeah, and so these became really popular because for some people this was the only way they could get to their software is with some sort of USB floppy drive.
Mm-hmm.
And right now that I've got the LC520 to play with, I want to put some stuff on a floppy disk from my iMac G3 that's running OS 9. And so the only way I can really do that is with some sort of little drive. So I got one for about $5 off eBay, so now I can save files on the floppy disk and put them on the LC520.
Right. So the LC520, is that HFS Plus? Does that support it?
I'm not sure.
The file system, you don't have to have any special formatting to put it in the LC520.
I don't think so, but I'll find that out.
Well, they changed in about 90, I'm going to say 96, but that could be too early. They changed from HFS, the hierarchical file system, to HFS Plus. The HFS was basically the file system of the original Macintosh with support for multiple levels of folders. So it was very inefficient. If you had a lot of small files, then it would use up a lot of hard disk space. So HFS...
Just to catalog all that stuff.
Yeah, HFS Plus, which is what they have today and what they still use. We're thinking of changing. But
I haven't had problems taking stuff from my OS X Mac, my new iMac, burning it to CD and then putting it on the LC520. Oh. I haven't had any problems doing that.
Oh.
Which leads me to believe that
probably.
Maybe it's
well,
okay.
Well, I don't know if Apple uses the standard file system for CDs, which is defined, I think, in an ISO standard.
Right.
Or if they used actual HFS Plus to burn onto the CD. But it depends.
Well, I'll give a full report in the next episode, then.
All right, okay.
Well, I'll tell you if it works or not.
If it doesn't work out, then what I would recommend is booting it is putting it on the disk, putting it on a floppy disk, then taking that over to your iMac G3 with OS 9, copying all the files off, reformatting the disk as just plain HFS, and then copying the files back on.
Well, my plan was to use the iMac G3 as kind of the hub between the modern world and the LC520. So in other words, I would take things like Newton Toolkit and Newton Utilities from the iMac G3, which I can still get on the internet and play around with. You know, download those files off of, I'm using like Classilla and Mozilla and iCab on the G3. And then download those files on the G3, put them on the floppy disk, and then take the floppy disk out and put it in the LC520.
Right.
So I'm not really using the new iMac running Snow Leopard in any of this. I'm gonna play it safe and use the OS 9 Mac. So, but I'll give a full report and let everybody know how it works. But man, it's kind of like cassette tapes. You know, back when we used to listen to music on cassettes. I am so glad to be done with floppy disks because I have a bunch of them with all my classic Macs, and they are just so clumsy and fragile and. I'm so glad we're done with it. And small. You can only hold, you know, a megabyte and a half or so on them.
And then, who was it? iOmega? Tried to make them super by turning them into zip disks.
Yes.
What idea was that?
And that lasted a couple years, and then we got CDs. And
I was surprised Apple put them on, really. But on their Power Mac. Was it Power Max?
Yeah.
Surprised they put them in, but hey.
Yeah. Give me a USB drive any day. So, gosh, David, is there anything else you want to talk about this week?
Why don't we do the news? Or the happenings around the internet thing?
Yes.
Okay. So, what should we start with? Can you think of a news story?
Well, they thought the iPad pre-order was going to happen any day now, so we're kind of waiting on that.
Dan Benjamin tweeted about it earlier today.
Yeah, and I've heard from a couple other people. I think it was on MacSurfer.com. Do you use MacSurfer.com?
No, what is that?
Oh my gosh, it's great. It's they update every morning at 10 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, MacSurfer.com. It's kind of like an aggregator. So they pull in all the news from all the Mac sites and put it in one browsable website. And actually, it's kind of how I get most of my traffic from Newton Poetry, is that I post articles to MacSurfer, and they throw it in with all the other Mac articles of the day.
Oh.
It's great. It's how I get all my Mac news. All
right. Didn't know about that.
It's almost like an RSS feeder before there was RSS, and they pretty much just do it plain old HTML style.
I'm eating an apple. Probably should have chosen a quieter fruit to eat.
It's okay. It's timely.
So, MacBook Weekly this week was...
Yeah, what fun.
Their Super Pick week.
Yeah, that was great.
Have you looked at any of the things they recommended?
No, because actually I just finished up the podcast on my way home this evening.
Oh, right, okay. Well,
I listen to it the day after it comes out.
Yeah, well, I listen to it live, like like I do in the conversation.
Right.
Back when, as I was tweeting in my Twitter, where I can never remember when it's on. I started listening at 5 o'clock. Wait a minute, this isn't Mac Break. What is this? And then it went to Windows Weekly. And then it went to something else. I don't know, but eventually it came on. So.
Right. Yeah, live.twit.tv has some, they show the old episodes of all the Twit Network, and that's kind of fun because you can catch stuff that you don't normally catch. I listen to MacBreak Weekly, This Week in Google, and sometimes This Week in Tech. Depends on who's on there.
Well, I only usually listen to the MacBreak. I hear This Week in Google as well because I tune in for MacBreak at 5 o'clock and I...
Yeah, catch bits of that.
So it's very fun. I've looked into some of the things they suggested. Scrivener. Mm-hmm. I've looked at that. That seems like an interesting thing. I don't know if it would appeal to me as a writer unless I was really going to be writing an awful...
Now, this is the word processing app, right?
Word processing / organizational tool / basically everything a writer needs in one application.
Right. So if you're an author, this is your thing.
Yeah. So if you're writing a book, then that's great. But I don't think I don't think it's going to really appeal to me until I'm really writing huge things in probably 10, 20, 30 years time. So... A while until that will.
Is that a promise? Can we look forward to something in 10 or 20
book,
years?
Maybe in...
From Sir David Kendall?
I don't think so. Not in the near future, at least.
Okay. Well, I'm going to take a dive on Squarespace, I think. I've got a couple projects coming up for work that I really don't want to mess with the back-end stuff, and I think all the hosting and things that they do... are pretty attractive, and so I think I'm going to try them out for something. Yeah.
As somebody who's used to messing around in configuration panels for ages, I was amazed by how quickly Merlin changed the theme on his website.
Right. Yeah, that was a lot of fun. And the other one is PasteBot, because Merlin Mann talked about PasteBot and how he uses it as a clipboard manager on the iPhone, and so I'm going to want to give that a try, too. Mm.
We need to talk about something that somebody else recommended. All these things so far have been Merlin's suggestions. I was Scrivener. I think Scrivener was Merlin's.
Well, Squeezebox. I think the Squeezebox sounds like a great idea because my stereo broke, and so I really haven't had a stereo in my room for a while. And what I do is I have my iBook G4 up here running as kind of my iTunes server. Mm-hmm. So it connects to the iTunes home directory on my iMac, and then it pulls up all the content, and I can listen to everything on the iBook. Mm. But what I would like is a proper stereo because the speakers on it aren't very good, and so I'd like a more elegant and frankly loud solution to my problem.
So your stereo broke.
Yeah, the CD drive got kind of bad, so I had to dump it.
So what I was going to suggest is that you hook your iBook. What is it? Headphone jack, audio out jack, whatever you call it. The thing where you plug it in and it plays music out through external speakers.
That's the headphone jack.
Yeah. And plug that into your stereo, but it's broken. So.
Yeah. And it didn't have the nice speakers on it either. So, you know, I could do it with the iBook if I was to get a nice set of computer speakers. Mm. And I'd have to do some shopping on that. That's an idea. I wouldn't mind doing that.
Mm. If you're looking for a nice pair of computer speakers, I can't really... I wouldn't call it a personal recommendation since I don't actually own them, but I have... heard them, but the Harman Kardon sound sticks that Apple used to ship with Power Mac G4s They're very good, and they still make them. Harman Kardon.
Okay. I'll give those a look. Yeah, that would be nice. If I can find a nice, affordable way to listen to my music on my iBook. And that would justify my iBook's existence, really, because that's all I use it for nowadays. So, what else did you like in the picks?
Leo talked about Evernote.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've tried Evernote, and my main problem with it is that the desktop client app won't run on Tiger. But the iPhone app seems okay. You read my blog at all, you'll know that I'm a very, very picky about iPhone apps. I do not just buy apps and use them. For me to use them, they must be at absolute top quality. Just because I'm like that. But it seemed a little... the things about it... It's hard to describe why I don't like iPhone apps, really, is what I'm trying to say. But Evernote is one of those apps that is just, it seems a little too un-iPhone-like, if you understand. Like, people used to say that things were Mac-like back in the old System 7 days when everything was kind of very centered around the human interface guidelines. Still is now, but it's less so.
But, do you think it's because Evernote is on a bunch of different platforms?
Like I don't think that would affect the iPhone app. But anyway, Evernote. I mean, I use Shovebox now. And I'm considering a switch from that to Yojimbo. But right now, Shovebox is great. I mean, I got that last post I put on my blog about slideshows. That was written entirely in Shovebox, and then just copied and pasted into the Chirp interface.
Yeah, I've got it. I'll have to give it a try. I know you keep bragging about it, so maybe I'll give it a run.
Which is Shovebox?
Yes, Shovebox.
The main thing that I found irritating is that the on the desktop version, it's a menu LUT or whatever you call it. You know, where it's not in the dock, it's in the menu. And so it doesn't have its own menu bar. And so if you drop a window, if it goes into the background and you can't see it, then it's hard to find it. And you have to go into Expose to bring it up. That's my only real niggle with it.
Right. Okay. Any other internet news? You know what we'll have to do is like a lineup of podcasts that we listen to and why we like them and things. We could do our own pick show, couldn't we?
A podcast pick show.
Yeah, that'd be fun. I did a post at Newton Poetry probably about a year ago or so when I posted a bunch of them that I listened to. But I've added a few that I wouldn't mind talking about. We'll have to plan on that for a future episode.
Oh, did you hear about the laptops at the school in Philadelphia?
Oh yeah, with the pictures taken. Yeah, that was something.
Terrible.
And those were all PCs, weren't they? They were just MacBooks. Regular PC laptops. Were they MacBooks? Holy moly! Macs used for nefarious purposes.
But the implications of that is just dear.
And it's chilling.
What is it?
Well, now you wonder, you know, because colleges in the U.S., they give out MacBooks, or, you know, you have to buy one before you go to school. And so, you know, before you buy one, you better make sure it's still in the box, original, with everything, you know, that you install and not handed to you by the school.
I don't think I'd accept it if it was... out of the box anyway. I just like opening it as... I always like the smell of Apple products when you open it.
Mm-hmm. But now I'm going to cover up my webcam with duct tape so that no one sees me. Now you've made me nervous, David.
Oh, I know. Get your tinfoil hat out.
Yep, will do.
Since the last show, I finished moving my website to Chirp.
Yeah, it looks great. Yeah.
It looks exactly the same. that's your definition of great.
That's what I meant.
Well, yeah. There's a few broken things, but seems to have worked okay overall.
Good. And where can people find your website at, David?
My website, The Anthology of Hypertext, is at dpk.org.uk.
Right. You can find him there. All his musings and thoughts and rants about email protocol.
Yeah.
You can find. And I liked your post about presentations just recently. Mm. That was really good. And as a public speaker, I speak in public quite often. I really liked what you had to say. So nice job.
Thank you.
People should check it out. You can find me, Dave Lawrence. All my Mac stuff is at newtonpoetry.com. And like we were talking earlier, I haven't posted any long posts or deep thoughts or anything to there in a while, but I've got a few things in the hopper that I'm working on. And so, but you know, there just isn't a whole lot of news in the Newton world these days. So we're kind of waiting around.
Waiting for Apple to introduce the Newton MessagePad 3000.
Right. Well, we're still working on the year 2010 bug.
He finished patching the second Lazarus bug.
Not quite.
No.
We haven't gotten the full word yet. So, but you'll hear it when we do. So here's hoping.
Yeah.
So David, I think that wraps up another episode of the Hello Show.
I think it does.
Yes. Well, nice to talking to you again, and thanks everybody for listening.
Okay, yes, thank
you. And we'll catch you next
time. Thank you, and sorry, especially to our future guest, whenever we can get him on, about my complaints with email etiquette.
You will be held accountable, sir.
Okay. Whatever you say.
We'll talk to you next time. Yeah, we'll talk to you next time.
Yep. Tune in next time.
Bye.